Say, surely. Harry sighed. And I'm sure you've said it, Doris. And once you've said it, I'm sure he'll do as he wishes. Is that your final word? Do you intend to do nothing while he makes plans to marry a woman like that? What do you expect me to do, Doris? Manella saved Rachel's life. Do you expect him to forget that? She saved mine, too, for that matter. That seemed to feed Doris' anger. She said, And you also saved her. The score is even. I didn't exactly. Of course you did. The military rascals who now run the Empire would have slaughtered her if you didn't step in and sell them your resignation and your support in order to save her. Though I may have evened the score, which I don't think I have, Rach has not. And, Doris, dear, I would be very careful when it came to using unfortunate terms to describe our government. These times are not going to be as easy as the times when Cleon ruled, and there will always be informers to repeat what they hear you say. Never mind that. I don't like that woman. I presume that at least is permissible. Permissible, certainly, but of no use. Harry looked down at the floor, deep in thought. Nora's usually unfathomable black eyes were positively flashing in anger. Harry looked up. What I'd like to know, Doris, is why? Why do you dislike Manella so? She saved our lives. If it had not been for her quick action, both Rach and I would be dead. Doris snapped back. Yes, Harry. I know that better than anyone. And if she had not been there, I would not have been able to do a thing to prevent your murder. I suppose you think I should be grateful. But every time I look at that woman, I am reminded of my failure. I know these feelings are not truly rational, and that is something I can't explain. So do not ask me to like her, Harry. I cannot. But the next day, even Doris had to back down when the doctor said, Your son wishes to see a woman named Manella. He's in no condition to see visitors, snapped Doris. On the contrary, he is. He's doing quite well. Besides, he insists, and is doing so most strenuously. I don't know that we'd be wise to refuse him. So they brought in Manella, and Rach greeted her effusively, and with the first faint signs of happiness since he had arrived at the hospital. He made an unmistakable small gesture of dismissal at Doris. Lips tightened, she left. And the day came when Rach said, She'll have me, Mom. Doris said, Do you expect me to be surprised, you foolish man? Of course she'll have you. You're her only chance, now that she's been disgraced, ousted from the security establishment. Rach said, Mom, if you're trying to lose me, this is exactly the way of doing it. Don't say things like that. I'm only thinking of your welfare. I'll think of my own good, thank you. I'm no one's ticket to respectability, if you'll stop to think of it. I'm not exactly handsome. I'm short. Dad isn't First Minister anymore, and I talk solid lower class. What's there for her to be proud of in me? She can do a lot better, but she wants me. And let me tell you, I want her. But you know what she is. Of course I know what she is. She's a woman who loves me. She's the woman I love. That's what she is. And before you fell in love with her, what was she? You know some of what she had to do while undercover in Y. You were one of her assignments. How many others were there? Are you able to live with her past, with what she did in the name of duty? Now you can afford to be idealistic. But someday you will have your first quarrel with her, or your second, or your 19th, and you'll break down and say, Rach shouted angrily. Don't say that. When we fight, I'll call her unreasonable, irrational, nagging, whining, inconsiderate, a million adjectives that will fit the situation. And she'll have words for me. But they'll all be sensible words that can be withdrawn when the fight is over. You think so, but just wait till it happens. Rach had turned white. He said, Mother, you've been with Father now for almost 20 years. Father is a hard man to disagree with, but there have been times when you two have argued. I've heard you. In all those 20 years, has he ever called you by any name that would in any way compromise your role as human being? For that matter, have I done so? Can you conceive of me doing so now, no matter how angry I get? Doris struggled. Her face did not show emotion in quite the same way that Rach's did, or Selden's would, but it was clear that she was momentarily incapable of speech. In fact, said Rach, pushing his advantage, and feeling horrible at doing so, the fact of the matter is that you are jealous because Manella saved Dad's life. You don't want anyone to do that but you. Well, you had no chance to do so. Would you prefer it if Manella had not shot Andorin, if Dad had died, and me too? Doris said in a choked voice. He insisted on going out to meet the gardeners alone. He would not allow me to come. But that wasn't Manella's fault. Is that why you want to marry her? Gratitude? No, love. And so it was, but Manella said to Rach after the ceremony, Your mother may have attended the wedding because you insisted, Rach, but she looked like one of those thunderclouds they sometimes send sailing under the dome. Rach laughed. She doesn't have the face to be a thundercloud. You're just imagining it. Not at all. How will we ever get her to give us a chance? We'll just be patient. She'll get over it. But Doris Venabile didn't. 2 years after the wedding, Wanda was born. Doris' attitude toward the child was all Rach and Manella could have wanted. But Wanda's mother remained that woman to Rach's mother. Chapter 6 Harry Selden was fighting off melancholy. He was lectured in turn by Doris, by Rach, by Hugo, and by Manella. All united to tell him that 60 was not old. They simply did not understand. He had been 30 when the first hint of psychohistory had come to him, 32 when he delivered his famous lecture at the decennial convention, following which everything seemed to happen to him at once. After his brief interview with Cleon, he had fled across Trantor and met Demerzel, Doors, Hugo, and Rach, to say nothing of the people of Mycogen, of Dahl, and of Y. He was 40 when he became First Minister, and 50 when he had relinquished the post. Now he was 60. He had spent 30 years on psychohistory. How many more years would he require? How many more years would he live? Would he die with the psychohistory project unfinished after all? It was not the dying that bothered him, he told himself. It was the matter of leaving the psychohistory project unfinished. he went to see Hugo Amaral. In recent years, they had somehow drifted apart, as the Psychohistory Project had steadily increased in size. In the first years at Streeling, it had merely been Selden and Amaral working together, no one else. Now, Amaral was nearly 50, not exactly a young man, and he had somehow lost his spark. In all these years, he had developed no interest in anything but psychohistory. No woman, no companion, no hobby, no subsidiary activity. Amaral blinked at Selden, who couldn't help but note the changes in the man's appearance. Part of it may have been because Hugo had had to have his eyes reconstructed. He saw perfectly well, but there was an unnatural look about them, and he tended to blink slowly. It made him appear sleepy. "What do you think, Hugo?" said Selden. "Is there any light at the end of the tunnel?"
"Light?"
"Yes, as a matter of fact," said Amaral. "There's this new fellow, Temwail Ilar. You know him, of course."
"Oh, yes, I'm the one who hired him. Very vigorous and aggressive. How's he doing?"
"I can't say I'm really comfortable with him, Harry. His loud laughter gets on my nerves. But he's brilliant. The new system of equations fits right into the prime radiant, and they seem to make it possible to get around the problem of chaos."
"Seem, or will?"
"Too early to say, but I'm very hopeful. I have tried a number of things that would have broken them down if they were worthless, and the new equations survived them all. I'm beginning to think of them as the achaotic equations."
"I don't imagine," said Selden, "we have anything like a rigorous demonstration concerning these equations."
"No, we don't, though I've put half a dozen people on it, including Ilar, of course."
Amaral turned on his prime radiant, which was every bit as advanced as Selden's was, and he watched as the curving lines of luminous equations curled in midair. Too small, too fine to be read without amplification.
"Add the new equations, and we may be able to begin to predict."
"Each time I study the prime radiant now," said Selden thoughtfully, "I wonder at the electroclarifier and how tightly it squeezes material into the lines and curves of the future. Wasn't that Ilar's idea, too?"
"Yes, with the help of Cinda Monet, who designed it."
"It's good to have new and brilliant men and women in the project. Somehow it reconciles me to the future."
"You think someone like Ilar may be heading the project someday?" asked Amaral, still studying the prime radiant.
"Maybe. After you and I have retired. Or died."
Amaral seemed to relax and turned off the device. "I would like to complete the task before we retire or die."
"So would I, Hugo. So would I."
"Psychohistory has guided us pretty well in the last 10 years.
That was true enough, but Selden knew that one couldn't attach too much triumph to that. Things had gone smoothly and without major surprises.
Psychohistory had predicted that the center would hold after Cleon's death, predicted it in a very dim and uncertain way, and it did hold. Trentor was reasonably quiet. Even with an assassination and the end of a dynasty, the center had held. It did so under the stress of military rule. Doris was quite right in speaking of the junta as "those military rascals." She might have even gone farther in her accusations without being wrong. Nevertheless, they were holding the empire together, and would continue to do so for a time. Long enough, perhaps, to allow psychohistory to play an active role in the events that were to transpire.
Lately, Hugo had been speaking about the possible establishment of foundations, separate, isolated, independent of the empire itself, serving as seeds for developments through the forthcoming Dark Ages and into a new and better empire. Selden himself had been working on the consequences of such an arrangement. But he lacked the time, and, he felt, with a certain misery, he lacked the youth as well. His mind, however firm and steady, did not have the resiliency and creativity that it had had when he was 30, and with each passing year, he knew he would have less. Perhaps he ought to put the young and brilliant Ilar on the task, taking him off everything else. Selden had to admit to himself, shamefacedly, that the possibility did not excite him. He did not want to have invented psychohistory so that some stripling could come in and reap the final fruits of fame. In fact, to put it at its most disgraceful, Selden felt jealous of Ilar, and realized it just sufficiently to feel ashamed of the emotion. Yet, regardless of his less rational feelings, he would have to depend on other younger men, whatever his discomfort over it. Psychohistory was no longer the private preserve of himself and Amaryl. The decade of his being First Minister had converted it into a large, government-sanctioned and budgeted undertaking, and, quite to his surprise, after resigning from his post as First Minister and returning to Streeling University, it had grown still larger. Harry grimaced at its ponderous and pompous official name, the Selden Psychohistory Project at Streeling University. But most people simply referred to it as the project. The military junta apparently saw the project as a possible political weapon, and while that was so, funding was no problem. Credits poured in. In return, it was necessary to prepare annual reports, which, however, were quite opaque. Only fringe matters were reported on, and even then the mathematics was not likely to be within the purview of any of the members of the junta. It was clear as he left his old assistant that Amaryl at least was more than satisfied with the way psychohistory was going, and yet Selden felt the blanket of depression settle over him once more. He decided it was the forthcoming birthday celebration that was bothering him. It was meant as a celebration of joy, but to Harry it was not even a gesture of consolation, it merely emphasized his age. Besides, it was upsetting his routine, and Harry was a creature of habit. His office, and a number of those adjoining, had been cleared out, and it had been days since he had been able to work normally. His proper offices would be converted into halls of glory, he supposed, and it would be many days before he could get back to work. Only Amaryl absolutely refused to budge and was able to maintain his office. Selden had wondered peevishly who had thought of doing all this. It wasn't Doors, of course. She knew him entirely too well. Not Amaryl or Rach, who never even remembered their own birthdays. He had suspected Manila, and had even confronted her on the matter. She admitted that she was all for it, and had given orders for the arrangements to take place, but she said that the idea for the birthday party had been suggested to her by Tamwile Ilar. The brilliant one, thought Selden. Brilliant in everything. He sighed. If only the birthday were all over. Chapter 7. Doris poked her head through the door. Am I allowed to come in? No, of course not. Why should you think I would? This is not your usual place. I know, sighed Selden. I have been evicted from my usual place because of the stupid birthday party. How I wish it were over. There you are. Once that woman gets an idea in her head, it takes over and grows like the Big Bang.
Selden changed sides at once. Come, she means well, Doris.
Save me from the well-meaning, said Doris. In any case, I'm here to discuss something else, something which may be important.
Go ahead. What is it?
I've been talking to Wanda about her dream.
She hesitated.
Selden made a gargling sound in the back of his throat, then said,
I can't believe it. Just let it go.
No. Did you bother to ask her for the details of the dream?
Why should I put the little girl through that?
Neither did Rach nor Manila. It was left up to me.
But why should you torture her with questions about it?
Because I had the feeling I should, said Doris grimly. In the first place, she didn't have the dream when she was home in her bed.
Where was she then?
In your office.
What was she doing in my office?
She wanted to see the place where the party would be, and she walked into your office, and of course there was nothing to see, as it's been cleared out in preparation. But your chair was still there. The large one, tall back, tall wings, broken down, the one you won't let me replace.
Harry sighed, as if recalling a long-standing disagreement.
It's not broken down. I don't want a new one.
Go on.
She curled up in your chair and began to brood over the fact that maybe you weren't really going to have a party, and she felt bad. Then, she tells me, she must have fallen asleep because nothing is clear in her mind, except that in her dream there were two men, not women, she was sure about that, two men talking.
And what were they talking about?
She doesn't know exactly. You know how difficult it is to remember details under such circumstances. But she says it was about dying, and she thought it was you because you were so old. And she remembers two words clearly. They were lemonade death.
What?
Lemonade death.
What does that mean?
I don't know. In any case, the talking ceased. The men left, and there she was in the chair, cold and frightened, and she's been upset about it ever since.
Selden mulled over Dora's report. Then he said, Look, dear, what importance can we attach to a child's dream?
We can ask ourselves first, Harry, if it even was a dream.
What do you mean?
Wanda doesn't say outright it was. She says she must have fallen asleep. Those are her words. She didn't say she fell asleep. She said she must have fallen asleep.
What do you deduce from that?
She may have drifted off into a half-doze, and in that state heard two men, two real men, not two dream men, talking.
Real men? Talking about killing me with lemonade death?
Something like that, yes.
Doris, said Selden forcefully, I know that you're forever foreseeing danger for me, but this is going too far. Why should anyone want to kill me?
It's been tried twice before.
So it has.
But consider the circumstances. The first attempt came shortly after Cleon appointed me First Minister. Naturally, this was an offense to the well-established court hierarchy, and I was very resented. A few thought they might settle matters by getting rid of me. The second time was when the Joranumites were trying to seize power, and they thought I was standing in their way, plus Namarti's distorted dream of revenge. Fortunately, neither assassination attempt succeeded. But why should there now be a third? I am no longer First Minister and haven't been for 10 years. I am an aging mathematician in retirement, and surely no one has anything to fear from me. The Joranumites have been rooted out and destroyed, and Namarti was executed long ago. There is absolutely no motivation for anyone to want to kill me. So please, Doors, relax. When you're nervous about me, you get unsettled, which makes you more nervous still, and I don't want that to happen. Doors rose from her seat and leaned across Harry's desk. It's easy for you to say that there is no motive to kill you, but none is needed. Our government is now a completely irresponsible one, and if they wish... Stop, commanded Selden loudly. Then, very quietly, not a word, Doors, not a word against the government. That could get us in the very trouble you're foreseeing. I'm only talking to you, Harry. Right now you are. But if you get into the habit of saying foolish things, you don't know when something will slip out in someone else's presence, someone who will then be glad to report you. Just learn as a matter of necessity to refrain from political commentary. I'll try, Harry, said Doris. But she could not keep the indignation out of her voice. She turned on her heel and left. Selden watched her go. Doris had aged gracefully, so gracefully that at times she seemed not to have aged at all. Though she was 2 years younger than Selden, her appearance had not changed nearly as much as his had in the 28 years they had been together. Naturally. Her hair was frosted with gray, but the youthful luster beneath the gray still shone through. Her complexion had grown more sallow, her voice was a bit huskier, and of course she wore clothes that were suitable for middle age. However, her movements were as agile and as quick as ever. It was as if nothing could be allowed to interfere with her ability to protect Harry in case of an emergency. Harry sighed. This business of being protected, more or less against his will, at all times, was sometimes a heavy burden. Chapter 8 Manella came to see Selden almost immediately afterward. Pardon me, Harry, but what has Doris been saying? Selden looked up again. Nothing but interruptions. It wasn't anything important, Wanda's dream. Manella's lips pursed. I knew it. Wanda said Doris was asking her questions about it. Why doesn't she leave the girl alone? You would think that having a bad dream was some sort of felony. As a matter of fact, said Selden soothingly, it's just a matter of something Wanda remembered as part of the dream. I don't know if Wanda told you, but apparently in her dream she heard something about lemonade death. Manella was silent for a moment. Then she said, That doesn't really matter so much. Wanda is crazy about lemonade, and she's expecting lots of it at the party. I promised she'd have some with mycogenian drops in it, and she's looking forward to it. So that if she heard something that sounded anything like lemonade, it would be translated into lemonade in her mind. Yes. Why not? Except that in that case, what do you suppose it was that was actually said? She must have heard something in order to misinterpret it. I don't think that's necessarily so. But why are we attaching so much importance to a little girl's dream, Please. I don't want anyone talking to her about it anymore. It's too upsetting. I agree. I'll see to it that Doris drops the subject, at least with Wanda. All right. I don't care if she is Wanda's grandmother, Harry. I'm her mother, after all, and my wishes come first. Absolutely, said Selden soothingly, and looked after Manella as she left. That was another burden, the unending competition between those two women. Chapter 9. Temuel Ilar was 36 years old and had joined Selden's psychohistory project as senior mathematician 4 years earlier. He was a tall man with a habitual twinkle in his eye and with more than a touch of self-assurance as well. His hair was brown and had a loose wave in it, the more noticeable because he wore it rather long. He had an abrupt way of laughing, but there was no fault to be found with his mathematical ability. Ilar had been recruited from the West Mandanoff University, and Selden always had to smile when he remembered how suspicious Hugo Amaryll had been of him at first. But then, Amaryll was suspicious of everyone. Deep in his heart, Selden felt sure, Amaryll felt that psychohistory ought to have remained his and Harry's private province. But even Amaryll was now willing to admit that Ilar's membership in the group had eased his own situation tremendously. Hugo said, "His techniques for avoiding chaos are unique and fascinating. No one else in the project could have worked it out the way he did. Certainly nothing of this sort ever occurred to me. It didn't occur to you either, Harry." "Well," said Selden grumpily, "I'm getting old." "If only," said Amaryll, "he didn't laugh so loud." "People can't help the way they laugh." Yet the truth was that Selden found himself having a little trouble accepting Ilar. It was rather humiliating that he himself had come nowhere near the achaotic equations, as they were now called. It didn't bother Selden that he had never thought of the principle behind the electroclarifier. That was not really his field. The achaotic equations, however, he should indeed have thought of, or at least gotten close to. He tried reasoning with himself. Selden had worked out the entire basis for psychohistory, and the achaotic equations grew naturally out of that basis. Could Ilar have done Selden's work 3 decades earlier? Selden was convinced that Ilar couldn't have. And was it so remarkable that Ilar had thought up the principle of achaotism once the basis was in place? All this was very sensible and very true, yet Selden still found himself uneasy when facing Ilar, just slightly edgy, weary age facing flamboyant youth. Yet Ilar never gave him obvious cause for feeling the difference in years. He never failed to show Selden full respect, or in any way to imply that the older man had passed his prime. Of course, Ilar was interested in the forthcoming festivities, and had even, as Selden had discovered, been the first to suggest that Selden's birthday be celebrated. Was this a nasty emphasis on Selden's age? Selden dismissed the possibility. If he believed that, it would mean he was picking up some of Dor's tricks of suspicion. Ilar strode toward him and said, "Maestro." And Selden winced as always. He much preferred to have the senior members of the project call him Harry, but it seemed such a small point to make a fuss over. "Maestro," said Ilar, "the word is out that you've been called in for a conference with General Tenar." "Yes, he's the new head of the military junta, and I suppose he wants to see me to ask what psychohistory is all about. They've been asking me that since the days of Cleon and Demerzel." The new head, The junta was like a kaleidoscope, with some of its members periodically falling from grace and others rising from nowhere.
But it's my understanding he wants it now, right in the middle of the birthday celebration.
That doesn't matter. You can all celebrate without me.
No, we can't, Maestro. I hope you don't mind, but some of us got together and put in a call to the palace and put the appointment off for a week.
What? Said Selden, annoyed. Surely that was presumptuous of you, and risky besides.
It worked out well. They've put it off, and you'll need that time.
Why would I need a week? Ilar hesitated.
May I speak frankly, Maestro?
Of course you can. When have I ever asked that anyone speak to me in any way but frankly?
Ilar flushed slightly, his fair skin reddening, but his voice remained steady.
It's not easy to say this, Maestro. You're a genius at mathematics. No one on the project has any doubt of that. No one in the Empire, if they knew you and understood mathematics, would have any doubt about it. However, it is not given to anybody to be a universal genius.
I know that as well as you do, Ilar.
I know you do. Specifically, though, you lack the ability to handle ordinary people, shall we say, stupid people. You lack a certain deviousness, a certain ability to sidestep. And if you are dealing with someone who is both powerful in government and somewhat stupid, you can easily endanger the project, and for that matter, your own life, simply because you are too frank.
What is this? Am I suddenly a child? I've been dealing with politicians for a long time. I was first minister for 10 years, as perhaps you may remember.
Forgive me, Maestro, but you were not an extraordinarily effective one. You dealt with First Minister Demerzel, who was very intelligent by all accounts, and with the Emperor Cleon, who was very friendly. Now you will encounter military people who are neither intelligent nor friendly. Another matter entirely.
I've even dealt with military people and survived.
Not with General Dugal Tenar. He's another sort of thing altogether. I know him.
You know him? You have met him?
I don't know him personally, but he's from Mandanoff, which, as you know, is my sector, and he was a power there before he joined the junta and rose through its ranks.
And what do you know about him?
Ignorant, superstitious, violent. He is not someone you can handle easily or safely. You can use the weak to work out methods for dealing with him.
Selden bit his lower lip. There was something to what Ilar said, and Selden recognized the fact that, while he had plans of his own, it would still be difficult to try to manipulate a stupid, self-important, short-tempered person with overwhelming force at his disposal. He said uneasily,
"I'll manage somehow. The whole matter of a military junta is, in any case, an unstable situation in the Trantor of today. It has already lasted longer than might have seemed likely."
"Have we been testing that? I was not aware that we were making stability decisions on the junta."
"Just a few calculations by Amaryl, making use of your achaotic equations."
He paused.
"By the way, I've come across some references to them as the Ilar equations."
"Not by me, Maestro."
"I hope you don't mind, but I don't want that. Psychohistoric elements are to be described functionally and not personally. As soon as personalities intervene, bad feelings arise."
"I understand, and quite agree, Maestro."
In fact, said Selden with a touch of guilt, I have always felt it wrong that we speak of the basic Selden equations of psychohistory. The trouble is, that's been in use for so many years, it's not practical to try to change it.
If you'll excuse my saying so, Maestro, you're an exceptional case. No one, I think, would quarrel with your receiving full credit for inventing the science of psychohistory. But, if I may, I wish to get back to your meeting with General Tenar.
Well, what else is there to say?
I can't help but wonder if it might be better if you did not see him, did not speak to him, did not deal with him.
How am I to avoid that if he calls me in for a conference?
Perhaps you can plead illness and send someone in your place.
Whom?
Ilar was silent for a moment, but his silence was eloquent. Selden said, You, I take it.
Might that not be the thing to do? I am a fellow sectoral citizen of the General, which may carry some weight. You are a busy man, getting on in years, and it would be easy to believe that you are not entirely well. And if I see him, rather than yourself, please excuse me, Maestro. I can wiggle and maneuver more easily than you can.
Lie, you mean?
If necessary.
You'll be taking a huge chance.
Not too huge. I doubt that he will order my execution. If he becomes annoyed with me, as he well might, then I can plead, or you can plead on my behalf, youth and inexperience. In any case, if I get into trouble, that will be far less dangerous than if you were to do so. I'm thinking of the project, which can do without me a great deal more easily than it can do without you.
Selden said with a frown, I'm not going to hide behind you, Ilar. If the man wants to see me, he will see me. I refuse to shiver and shake and ask you to take chances for me. What do you think I am?
A frank and honest man, when the need is for a devious one.
A frank and honest man, when the need is for a devious one. I will manage to be devious, if I must. Please don't underestimate me, Ilar. Ilar shrugged hopelessly.
Very well. I can only argue with you up to a certain point.
In fact, Ilar, I wish you had not postponed the meeting. I would rather skip my birthday and see the General than the reverse. This birthday celebration was not my idea. His voice died away in a grumble. Ilar said, I'm sorry.
Well, said Selden with resignation, we'll see what happens.
He turned and left. Sometimes he wished ardently that he could run what was called a tight ship, making sure that everything went as he wished it to, leaving little or no room for maneuvering among his subordinates. To do that, however, would take enormous time, enormous effort, would deprive him of any chance of working on psychohistory himself. And besides, he simply lacked the temperament for it. He sighed. He would have to speak to Amaryl. Chapter 10 Selden strode into Amaryl's office unannounced.
Hugo, he said abruptly, the session with General Tenar has been postponed.
He seated himself in a rather pettish manner. It took Amaryl his usual few moments to disconnect his mind from his work. Looking up finally, he said,
What was his excuse?
It wasn't he. Some of our mathematicians arranged a week's postponement so that it wouldn't interfere with the birthday celebration. I find all of this to be extremely annoying.
Why did you let them do that?
I didn't.
They just went ahead and arranged things, Selden shrugged. In a way, it's my fault. I have whined so long about turning 60 that everyone thinks they have to cheer me up with festivities. Emeril said, Of course we can use the week. Selden sat forward, immediately tense. Is something wrong? No, not that I can see, but it won't hurt to examine it further. Look, Harry, this is the first time in nearly 30 years that psychohistory has reached the point where it can actually make a prediction. It's not much of one, it's just a small pinch of the vast continent of humanity, but it's the best we've had so far. All right, we want to take advantage of that, see how it works. Prove to ourselves that psychohistory is what we think it is, a predictive science. So it won't hurt to make sure that we haven't overlooked anything. Even this tiny bit of prediction is complex, and I welcome another week of study. Very well, then. I'll consult you on the matter before I go to see the General for any last-minute modifications that have to be made. Meanwhile, Hugo, do not allow any information concerning this to leak out to the others, not to anyone. If it fails, I don't want the people of the project to grow downhearted. You and I will absorb the failure ourselves and keep on trying. A rare, wistful smile crossed Emeril's face. You and I. Do you remember when it really was just the two of us? I remember it very well, and don't think that I don't miss those days. We didn't have much to work with. Not even the Prime Radiant, let alone the Electro Clarifier. But those were happy days. Happy, said Emeril, nodding his head. Chapter 11. The university had been transformed, and Harry Selden could not refrain from being pleased. The central rooms of the project complex had suddenly sprouted in color and light, with holography filling the air with shifting three-dimensional images of Selden at different places and different times. There was Doris Venabile smiling, looking somewhat younger. Rach as a teenager, still unpolished. Selden and Emeril, looking unbelievably young, bent over their computers. There was even a fleeting sight of Eto Demerzel, which filled Selden's heart with yearning for his old friend and the security he had felt before Demerzel's departure. The Emperor Cleon appeared nowhere in the holographics. It was not because holographs of him did not exist, but it was not wise under the rule of the junta to remind people of the past Imperium. It all poured outward, overflowing, filling room after room, building after building. Somehow, time had been found to convert the entire university into a display the likes of which Selden had never seen or even imagined. Even the dome lights were darkened to produce an artificial night against which the university would sparkle for 3 days. 3 days? Said Selden, half impressed, half horrified. 3 days, said Doris Venabile, nodding her head. The university would consider nothing less. The expense, the labor, said Selden, frowning. The expense is minimal, said Doris, compared to what you have done for the university. And the labor is all voluntary. The students turned out and took care of everything. A from-the-air view of the university appeared now, panoramically, and Selden stared at it with a smile forcing itself onto his countenance. Doris said, You're pleased. You've done nothing but grouse these past few months about how you didn't want any celebration for being an old man, and now look at you. Well, it is flattering. I had no idea that they would do anything like this.
Why not? You're an icon, Harry. The whole world, the whole empire knows about you.
They do not, said Selden, shaking his head vigorously. Not one in a billion knows anything at all about me, and certainly not about psychohistory. No one outside the project has the faintest knowledge of how psychohistory works, and not everyone inside does either.
That doesn't matter, Harry. It's you. Even the quadrillions who don't know anything about you or your work know that Harry Selden is the greatest mathematician in the empire.
Well, said Selden, looking around, they certainly are making me feel that way right now. But 3 days and 3 nights, the place will be reduced to splinters.
No, it won't. All the records have been stored away. The computers and other equipment have been secured. The students have set up a virtual security force that will prevent anything from being damaged.
You've seen to all of that, haven't you, Doris? Said Selden, smiling at her fondly.
A number of us have. It's by no means all me. Your colleague, Tamwell Ilar, has worked with incredible dedication.
Selden scowled.
What's the matter with Ilar? Said Doris.
Selden said, he keeps calling me Maestro. Doris shook her head.
Well, there's a terrible crime.
Selden ignored that and said, and he's young.
Worse and worse. Come, Harry, you're going to have to learn to grow old gracefully, and to begin with, you'll have to show that you're enjoying yourself. That will please others and increase their enjoyment, and surely you would want to do that. Come on, move around. Don't hide here with me. Greet everyone. Smile. Ask after their health. And remember that after the banquet, you're going to have to make a speech.
I dislike banquets, and I doubly dislike speeches.
You'll have to anyway. Now move.
Selden sighed dramatically and did as he was told. He cut quite an imposing figure as he stood in the archway leading into the main hall. The voluminous First Minister's robes of yesteryear were gone, as were the Heliconian-style garments he had favored in his youth. Now Selden wore an outfit that bespoke his elevated status. Straight pants, crisply pleated, a modified tunic on top. Embroidered in silver thread above his heart was the insignia, Selden Psychohistory Project at Streeling University. It sparkled like a beacon against the dignified titanium gray hue of his clothing. Selden's eyes twinkled in a face now lined by age, his 60 years given away as much by his wrinkles as by his white hair. He entered the room in which the children were feasting. The room had been entirely cleared, except for trestles with food upon them. The children rushed up to him as soon as they saw him, knowing as they did that he was the reason for the feast, and Selden tried to avoid their clutching fingers.
Wait, wait, children, he said. Now, stand back.
He pulled a small computerized robot from his pocket and placed it on the floor. In an empire without robots, this was something that he could expect to be eye-popping. It had the shape of a small furry animal, but it also had the capacity to change shapes without warning, eliciting squeals of children's laughter each time. And when it did so, the sounds and motions it made changed as well. Watch it, said Selden, and play with it, and try not to break it. Later on, there'll be one for each of you. He slipped out into the hallway leading back to the main hall, and realized as he did so that Wanda was following him.
Grandpa, she said.
Well, of course, Wanda was different. He swooped down and lifted her high in the air, turned her over, and put her down.
"Are you having a good time, Wanda?" he asked.
"Yes," she said. "But don't go into that room."
"Why not, Wanda? It's my room. It's the office where I work."
"It's where I had my bad dream."
"I know, Wanda, but that's all over, isn't it?" He hesitated, then he led Wanda to one of the chairs lining the hallway. He sat down and placed her in his lap.
"Wanda," he said, "are you sure it was a dream?"
"I think it was a dream."
"Were you really sleeping?"
"I think I was."
She seemed uncomfortable talking about it, and Selden decided to let it go. There was no use pushing her any further. He said,
"Well, dream or not, there were two men, and they talked of lemonade death, didn't they?"
Wanda nodded reluctantly. Selden said,
"You're sure they said lemonade?"
Wanda nodded again.
"Might they have said something else, and you thought they said lemonade?"
"Lemonade is what they said."
Selden had to be satisfied with that.
"Well, run off and have a good time, Wanda. Forget about the dream."
"All right, Grandpa."
She cheered up as soon as the matter of the dream was dismissed, and off she went to join the festivities. Selden went to search for Manella. It took him an extraordinarily long time to find her, since at every step he was stopped, greeted, and conversed with. Finally, he saw her in the distance, muttering,
pardon me, there's someone I must, pardon me.
He worked his way over to her with considerable trouble. "Manella," he said, and drew her off to one side, smiling mechanically in all directions.
"Yes, Harry," she said. "Is something wrong?"
"It's Wanda's dream."
"Don't tell me she's still talking about it."
"Well, it's still bothering her. Listen, we have lemonade at the party, haven't we?"
"Of course. The children adore it. I've added a couple of dozen different mycogenian taste buds to very small glasses of different shapes, and the children try them one after the other to see which taste best. The adults have been drinking it, too. I have. Why don't you taste it, Harry? It's great."
"I'm thinking. If it wasn't a dream, if the child really heard two men speak of lemonade death..."
He paused as though ashamed to continue. Manella said,
"Are you thinking that someone poisoned the lemonade? That's ridiculous. By now, every child in the place would be sick or dying."
"I know," muttered Selden. "I know."
He wandered off and almost didn't see Doris when he passed her. She seized his elbow.
"Why the face?" she said. "You look concerned."
"I've been thinking of Wanda's lemonade death."
"So have I, but I can't make anything of it so far."
"I can't help but think of the possibility of poisoning."
"Don't. I assure you that every bit of food that came into this party has been molecularly checked. I know you'll think that's my typical paranoia, but my task is guarding you, and that is what I must do."
"And everything is..."
"No poison, I promise you."
Selden smiled. "Well, good. That's a relief. I didn't really think..."
"Let's hope not," said Doris dryly. "What concerns me far more than this myth of poison is that I have heard that you're going to be seeing that monster Tenar in a few days."
"Don't call him a monster, Doris. Be careful.